As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello, it is Monday, November 30th. Hope you guys enjoyed your Thanksgiving weekend. I hope the leftovers are treating you well. But it's time to turn the page to another week of Football and Grits, the Athletic's SEC football podcast. It's Monday, which means I'm your host, David Ubben, joined, as always, by my co-host, Andy Staples, the Athletic's national writer. You can listen to him at the Andy Staples Show. Andy? An interesting weekend of football, for sure. But good to see you after the a little break, a little time off, somewhat for the show. I hope you guys enjoyed Friday's show. But yeah, it's been interesting.
It has been. It was a, you know, we usually think of Thanksgiving weekend as rivalry weekend in the SEC, and you get the Iron Bowl, which we got. But the, you know, there was no Florida, Florida State, no South Carolina, Clemson, mm-hmm. no Georgia, Georgia Tech. So that was a little weird, but I did think we had some interesting things happening, including a historic moment in a game that probably nobody would have watched otherwise.
Yeah. So Sarah Fuller at Vanderbilt, the first female to ever participate in a Power 5 game. We had this covered all week. I hope you guys were able to read that. You can go read Joe Rexroad and Chris Kamrani's story on how it all happened. Peter Ball was on site. He wrote about the scene. A really good column from Joe Rexroad after the game on its significance. Andy, this obnoxiously, I think we probably have to call this moment somewhat polarizing, this whole thing. Generally, I think I like to live in the middle most of the time, and I think that's kind of where I am on this. You know, from one side you hear, you know, oh, this was a publicity stunt. I don't believe that was the case at all.
And if it was, who cares?
She can kick. Yeah.
Well, why does it matter?
She can kick, and people really underestimated also the value of her being in the testing protocol.
Yes.
So she didn't put the rest of the team at risk. Like, that got totally glossed.
Well, and that's the deal, because Vandy has a former kicker who's in medical school there, mm-hmm. who conceivably could come back because he has 1 year of eligibility, but he would have had to go through the protocols to get back on the team, and it's not just filling out the paperwork. It's making sure you've tested enough and that they're comfortable having you around the team. She's been going through the exact protocols that they have the entire time because she was the goalkeeper on the soccer team.
Mm-hmm. So that's the thing. Was she Vanderbilt's, you know, absolute only option? Probably not. Maybe you could use a punter, maybe a position player to kick before so-and-so. But here's what happened Saturday. Somebody who can really kick a ball did exactly that. It did make some good headlines for Vanderbilt. It did something that no one had ever done before. And granted, I wish Vanderbilt's offense had offered her more opportunity, but she did execute.
Yeah,
she did execute a mortar kick to prevent a return. But it was a historic moment, and I think nobody's saying women have to play football against men to have their athletic exploits taken seriously, and nobody's suggesting that we're about to have a wave of women, you know, who are going to play football. There's very few, you know, that are going to hold their own on that front. But she did, and did her job. But it was a really cool moment. It was something that she earned. It was something that legitimately can inspire girls across the world to do whatever they want to do when people say they can't, because plenty of people said she couldn't, and she did. And it was something, like I said, we'd never seen before. I don't know why it can't just be that.
Well, that's
why
the thing.
I don't know why people,
living,
most of whom...
You talk about living
most
in the middle.
Of whom who don't really, you know, don't and won't care about Vanderbilt football before or ever again in their lives. I don't know why people are so quick to want to just take a dump all over this. It's really obnoxious.
Because there are stupid people out there who just want to be mad about something. This shouldn't be a polarizing issue. You should either celebrate it or not care. Those are really the only two options. If you're mad about it, probably look inward. Because there's probably something going on in your life or not going on in your life that is causing that. And it's probably because you're kind of pathetic. And so that's really all there is to it. And I know there's some people, no, it's not because I'm pathetic. But it is because you're pathetic. It is. Because you're either really happy about this, you're like, oh, that's awesome, that's pretty cool. Or you're like, don't care. Either one of those, cool. But if you're mad about it, it's probably because you're just sad and really not good at life. Oh, well.
I think that's a fair assessment. I just think, you know, things are rarely one thing. A pure publicity stunt? No. A pure necessity? No. I don't know. I just know it was pretty cool. And if you want to denigrate it, you suck. Sorry.
Yeah. I'm sorry. You're a loser. You probably have few friends, or they're losers too. And that's cool. I mean, if that's what you want to be, it's awesome. You know, blow your own horn, bang your own drum.
Indeed. Well, coming in hot off the top for this week, Andy, a lot of good football, not a lot of great memorable moments. But if there's one moment I want to remember this weekend, that's probably the one. And so let's get into it. Thanks, Andy. Thanks for listening to the show. Thanks for subscribing to our listeners. If you guys are not subscribed to The Athletic, you can do that at theathletic.com/grits. And leave us a rating, a review. It only helps the show, helps us bring more shows to you. Andy, not a fantastic weekend of SEC football, but the best game. I gotta go with the Egg Bowl. I felt like there was a significant lack of flagrant acts of relief, but we had Matt Corral throwing it around. We got a vintage Mike Leach quarterback line, 61 pass attempts, 440 yards, 10 rushes for 31 yards. This was not a great game, but it was probably the most fun game.
Yeah, and it was what we thought the Egg Bowl would be when this coaching matchup got set back in January. We thought, okay, this is going to be fun for years to come, and I think it will be. And it's funny because this was probably not the number of fireworks we expected, though we got some fun stuff. We got Matt Corral throwing it like 60 yards in the air perfectly. I mean, he's just let me ask you this, David, because I keep thinking about this the more I watch Matt Corral play. Does he need to go to the NFL and go make some money? Like, or is he better off coming back? Because the assumption is he's coming back, and why wouldn't he? Because he's not talked about that much in the draft circles. But look at what he can do. Look at the arm. Mm-hmm. Look at the athletic ability. Because I think that's been the most interesting thing about their offense this year is you thought, okay, they need to have John Rhys Plumlee in if they want the really athletic mobile quarterback. And obviously John Rhys Plumlee is a great athlete. But Matt Corral is a really good athlete and good enough to get you out of trouble and make something decent happen from a broken play. And you look at the needs of quarterback in the NFL, you look at who's potentially going to be a first-round draft pick. If I'm Matt Corral, I might do some research these next few weeks.
Yeah, it's that classic tools versus production thing, and the production obviously has been there this year. I'd like to see him be a little more accurate, maybe. But I like the arm strength. I think the tools are there. Yeah, I think you have to test the waters and see what there is.
Come back and light it up next year.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't think that there's a chance of regression. I mean, another year in Lane Kiffin's offense with these weapons, and I think he would do very, very well. So, I think you smell around, and if people are telling you, hey, one more year, you can be a first-round, second-round guy, I think so. Because I don't know that I see that this year.
By the way, I think Mac Jones should do the same thing. I know we're going to talk about him later.
Yeah.
But sniff around, because he's operating at the height of his powers right now, too.
Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting. A lot of fascinating decisions. I think when you look especially at all the seniors that, have some decisions to make at the end of the year, I mean, this is just going to be something we've never seen before. So I'm fascinated to see how this all shakes out. But I think if I'm Matt Corral, I probably take one more year. back at Ole Miss. Well, and you know, everybody's personal situation is differently, yeah. but different.
Well,
but,
and Ole Miss could be a really interesting test case next year because, you know, Lane, and I've talked to Lane about this a few times, he's very just kind of beside himself on trying to recruit through this as a first-year coach because he didn't come from another SEC school where they were kind of fishing from the same pond, so they, you know, had kids in camp that were class of 2022 guys and 2021 guys. You know, they came from FAU. The kids they had in their camp are not necessarily kids that would get recruited by Ole Miss. So he is flying blind from a recruiting standpoint. And I am curious, how much will he use that one-time transfer exemption, which is going to get passed? Like, he could recruit essentially a new defense for Ole Miss just like that. And what a selling point that would be if Matt Corral's back and you say, look at what we did offensively. Now imagine if we had a good defense and you could cherry pick the best defensive players from the group of five and create a new defense. I mean, it's fascinating.
I like this idea. And you can sell guys on, we're going to have fun doing it. That's the thing. I think that there's not a lot of SEC programs that I feel like, or even college football programs that I feel like are having fun. Ole Miss seems like they're having fun.
Yeah.
I think we expected that, and it's been cool to watch.
Well, and it's interesting because, I mean, Clemson has been doing this for a while where they play at an elite level, but it seems fun. I'd say that during the Ryan Day administration, Ohio State's like that too. Alabama's a different listen, Alabama guys do have fun, but it is the attitude is different, and they'll tell you that. Like, I remember Jonathan Allen and A'shaun Robinson explaining it. It's like, it's a mindset. It's not for everybody, but this is – like Jonathan Allen will tell you, this matched my personality type.
Yeah.
And but not everybody's like that. Some guys do want to have fun and let it rip, and that's what Ole Miss seems to be offering right now. So yeah, I think that's going to be a really interesting next, you know, 8 months in Oxford.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/theathletic.
Best team performance. Andy, we got to look around. I'm going to give Missouri some credit for beating Vanderbilt, but this is more of a season achievement award, and let me tell you why.
Okay.
You know, Vanderbilt's been moving they've been moving the ball the last few weeks. No such luck. Again, a solid game for Missouri team, but the first-year coaches in this league are doing well, and if you look at Missouri right now, Eli Drinkwitz has Mizzou third in the East, a game behind Georgia, three games ahead of fourth place. There's only six SEC teams with winning records, and what would you think if at this point, you know, 2 months ago, I told you Mizzou was one of those schools? They've quietly put together a heck of a little year.
I would argue, though, that Eli Drinkwitz
capped it with a nice win over Vandy.
Had the best situation to come into.
Probably.
Barry Odom shouldn't have been fired last year. And this is not a shot at Eli Drinkwitz. It's not his fault Barry Odom got fired. It's the administration's fault. But they should not have fired Barry Odom after what he did last season. He did not deserve it. So it was a pretty good situation that Drinkwitz walked into, and it does feel like they've taken a little step forward because, you know, this probably would have been a 7-5 type team in a regular year. Mm-hmm. So if you can wind up 6-4, and we'll see if that happens, but if you can pull that off in this year, I think that's pretty darn good.
Mm-hmm. It helps them that they found a quarterback. I think Connor Bazelak is you know, that he's doing it every single week
if
now.
If you start him against the Vols, it's working well. Does that game turn out differently?
That's such a fascinating game in retrospect because Missouri just got absolutely dominated in that game. See, and part of it, you know, they did start Sean Robinson.
Yeah. I would argue that's what Tennessee should have been all year.
They try. They just haven't been able to, and they didn't turn the ball over in that game either. Yeah. Did you like another team this week as your best team of the week?
Yeah, Alabama. I mean, and I realize,
fair enough.
You know, this is the whole Urban Meyer never wins Big Ten Coach of the Year, even though he's clearly the best coach. Like, Alabama's the best team in the SEC, and Alabama looked like it. I mean, it's not easy to win the Iron Bowl 42-13. You got to be operating at a really high level, and Alabama's offense is definitely doing that, but Alabama's defense seems to have improved quite a bit as the season's gone on. And I think that's what I'm interested to see because Alabama-Florida is shaping up to be maybe the most exciting SEC championship game in a long time. You know what?
Maybe ever.
You know what it might be?
Maybe going back to those Tebow-Alabama
maybe
games.
Well, Alabama-Georgia in 12 was great. I'll tell you one. Probably the most fun I've had watching one of those and covering one of those was actually 2013, was Auburn-Missouri. That was a fun game because it was
like 66-42.
It was a shootout, and Missouri was in it till early in the fourth quarter. So this could be that. This could be that kind of shootout. And so I'm very excited about that. And just seeing Alabama evolve, and my best performance of the week, personally, from a human being, Steve Sarkisian. This is his
first. We didn't even get into the fact that they did all this with no Nick Saban.
First chance to lead a team since he gets fired from USC under very bad circumstances. I mean, he was an alcoholic. He was not doing the job. He got fired. It was justified. And he has gotten healthy. And he's doing things offensively that are the envy of the rest of college football. And you can say, well, not everybody has that kind of line. And not everybody has Najee Harris. And not everybody has those playmakers and Mac Jones and blah, blah, blah. But think about how many coaches would make the excuse going in, oh, we lost Tua, and all we got is this 3-star guy that we flipped from Kentucky. Like, what are we going to do with that? He didn't do that. The 3-star guy is a Heisman candidate. The offense is running at just optimum level. You've lost your best playmaker already, and all you do is get better.
It's pretty incredible. And I think, too, I think – you know, you touched on it, but obviously the Iron Bowl, an intense rivalry game. I liked Alabama to kind of do this, but the fact that they could just do it with no Nick Saban, it just looked like another ho-hum Alabama romp, and that's not easy to do in that ball game. So props to them. They were on my short list, but I felt like Missouri giving them the season-long award for slight overachievement.
Well, and Georgia, I mean, look, this is what we've wanted to see out of Georgia. And look, it's South Carolina with Mike Bobo as the interim head coach and a bunch of opt-outs, and probably this was going to happen. But Georgia beating a team the way they're supposed to beat a team for the first time since the Auburn game does feel like progress.
Well, I did give the Georgia offensive line my There's No I in Team Award. Since we have to make 5 trophies. Hopefully, our expense account.
Can we do like a Joe Moore Award, like with just one giant trophy that has to be brought in by forklift?
I suppose we could maybe get them some gift cards to like Red Robin or something. I don't know.
That's the Wisconsin offensive line loves Red Robin, so I think that's probably universal among offensive lines.
I like that. But the Georgia offensive line, I mean, who cares about JT Daniels anymore? 351 rushing yards, 104 and 2 scores from James Cook. I mean, I watched a good chunk of that game. There was a lot going on. But goodness, you could watch the first quarter and just be like, this is going to be a long night for South Carolina. No, and Georgia has not looked that dominant, you know, for most of a lot of this season, and they did on Saturday.
We got to talk about the other game in the SEC that affected the playoff. Well, Florida, Kentucky also affects the playoff race because Florida does have to keep winning. But and shout out to Kyle Pitts. Welcome back with three touchdown catches.
I mean, three scores.
He's unbelievable. And Trask was good, but, it, you know, Trask has put up such unbelievable numbers all year that looked like a ho-hum performance when it's funny because for the previous 10 seasons, that would have been just a great Florida passing performance. We'd be like, oh my God, it's amazing. Now it's like, oh, he only threw three touchdown passes. Was he sick? So
Dan Mullen raising the bar.
Yeah. So, and the Mullen Grantham conversation on the sideline just cracked me up because Mullen's just screaming at him and Grantham's like, I don't know how much Grantham was talking back to Mullen and how much he was just talking into his
headset.
It
didn't look like very much.
So, but it's like when I'm on the phone with customer service and my wife is reminding me of all the things I'm supposed to say to them. And some I pass along and some I don't. And then that makes the yelling increase. And I was laughing because I was looking at Twitter last night. So many Florida fans thinking this means Mullen's going to fire Todd Grantham. I want to be like, you do understand that those guys yell at each other all the time and have for the past 5 years. Like, that is their relationship. That doesn't mean it's not healthy. That doesn't mean it's over and one guy's getting fired. It means that's what they do.
Run hot.
Yeah.
Run hot.
That's right. It's a very passionate relationship. All right. So that was a very long way of getting to the Texas A&M LSU game because it was a boring game to watch, but
that was brutal.
Again, this is the part, and I realize that, you know, ESPN put up that graphic that said Texas A&M needed to win all of its remaining games convincingly to still have a shot at the playoff. I don't think that's true. I just think they have to keep winning. If they're 9-1 and Alabama wins the SEC title and Notre Dame wins the ACC title, Texas A&M's going to make the playoff. I'm just telling you that right now. They are going to make the playoff. Yeah. So did they convince anybody of anything last night? I don't know. But I do know that they won comfortably against LSU. Now, it didn't look great because they couldn't throw the ball against a defense that hasn't been able to defend the pass all year. But A&M's defense looked good.
And they got the defensive score. Buddy Johnson, 8 tackles, pick 6 in that second half there to give them a little breathing room. It wasn't pretty, but they got it done. And I think that's true. I mean, there's no amount of style points that's going to let them pass up an ACC champion or an ACC at large, you know, Clemson or Notre Dame. Or I guess what the at large would be Notre Dame, right?
No,
if they split those two. Notre,
if they split, they're both making.
If a 2-loss Clemson, A&M's getting in.
Yeah,
they're not gonna put in a 2-loss Clemson ahead of them.
I mean, that's so everybody wants to. It does come down to the ACC scenarios. That is how that would happen. It's the only way that would happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the style points conversation is somewhat overstated there. I suppose you can at least eliminate all doubt, you know, in case that, you know, Ohio State trips up or something along those lines. But I still think it comes down to just what happens with Clemson and Notre Dame for A&M's
and Alabama and Florida. Because if Florida wins, they're not getting in either. Because Alabama then becomes the potential second SEC team. So here's my thing on A&M and the style points. If your last four include LSU, Auburn, and Ole Miss, and I realize none of those teams are great this year, but they are all talented, and Ole Miss has proven that it can jump up and scare somebody really good with Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I mean, look at that versus what Ohio State has left. Ohio State has Michigan State and Michigan left. And Michigan State seems to get up for big games, so if Ohio State and Michigan State play next week, expect to get Michigan State's best. Realistically, those are not good teams that Ohio State has left. Those are not good teams that Ohio State has played with the exception of Indiana. All three of the teams I just mentioned are better than everyone not Indiana on Ohio State's schedule. So A&M's fine as far as that goes. They only need to beat each of those teams by a point. As long as they win, they have a chance. Now, it is not a sure thing. I mean, we're assuming that Trevor Lawrence and Clemson's defense will be fully operational when they play Notre Dame, and that was an overtime game without Trevor Lawrence and a lot of the good defensive players. So it's not going to be easy for Texas A&M to do it, but if they keep winning, they are giving themselves a chance.
Mm-hmm. And for whatever it's worth, whether you get in the playoff or not, they're playing playoff caliber football, and this is the breakthrough year that Jimbo needed. You know, as we're seeing all of these dream hires go up in flames, Scott Frost, mm-hmm. Jim Harbaugh, I'm forgetting someone
Tom Herman.
Else. Tom Herman, obviously. These dream hires that everyone was lauding, and they did not work out. Jimbo quietly just hanging out on the edge of the playoff.
And in the year he was supposed to do it. I think that's the more impressive thing is if you knew what was going on at A&M and you knew about the schedule and you looked at the roster, you said, okay, 2020 is the year it either works or it doesn't. And if it doesn't work, that contract was probably a bad idea. But if it does work, that contract was probably a good idea. And sure enough, it's working. And I wish I could – I don't have the Twitter handle of the A&M fan who sent this to me, and I'm sorry because they do deserve credit for this. This person has sent me the average cost per year of some of these coaches, and like Will Muschamp, like Willie Taggart getting fired at Florida State in year two, and then you add in what you have to pay the new staff and all that. Jimbo actually looks like a bargain compared to those guys. And the person, and again, I'm so sorry that I'm not giving you proper credit for it because this is a great line, but hiring great coaches is cheap. Firing bad coaches is incredibly expensive. And they're not wrong. I mean, if you look at it, if Jimbo is doing this in year three and they continue along the same, then they don't have to continue on an upward trajectory, but have a year like this every few years, that's what you paid him for.
I mean, it goes back to the whole thing of Nick Saban at $10 million a year is probably underpaid.
Oh, Nick Saban is worth $25 million a year.
I think you're probably right about that.
Dabo, too.
And, you know, there's plenty of folks around the SEC. I may be very acquainted with one that's learning that difficult lesson at the moment, a lesson that might cost them $19 million here shortly. So, interesting times. We've talked a lot about Bama, but I did give Devontae Smith my best individual performance of the week. 7 catches, 171 yards. That game breaker early, smoked Monday on that Mac Jones pump fake. He's really stepped up without Jalen Waddle. I don't think I had any doubts about this group without Waddle. We'll see when they get into the elite games later in the season.
See, I'm just glad the world is realizing what Devontae Smith is, because I just remember I was doing some off-season story this past year and was looking at through a bunch of Alabama offensive stats and just came across what he did and took a little deeper dive into his season last year. And I'm like, oh my God, he had one of the best seasons the receivers ever had in the SEC. And all we're talking about is the other guys. We're talking about Jerry Jeudy and Jalen Waddle and Henry Ruggs. And granted, those guys are awesome. But Devontae Smith is just a great football player. Great route runner, great worker. You talk to Mac Jones about the way that guy works, about the way Devontae Smith works. And, you know, it's funny because he started his career with two huge plays. Because remember, he had the catch to beat Mississippi State earlier that year in 17. And then he has the catch. Like, he could have lived the rest of his life on that catch against Georgia. But right now, he's playing his way into what should be a first-round selection. And I know, look, he's going to weigh in at the combine, and they're going to go, oh, God, no. Just do it, guys. You know he's going to be great. He's doing it against really good competition week after week after week after week for 4 years. He's going to be great. Just pick him in the first round. I know he's small.
I think it's a good idea. I'm with you on this, and hopefully he gives you some kickbacks for that sales pitch for the Devontae Smith.
He doesn't need a sales pitch.
Well, that will do it for this week's show. That will do it for this for today's show. Later this week, got a full set of content on our site and on this podcast feed. Aaron Suttles tomorrow, talking Tide, answering your questions. I'll be here later this week, of course, with Mitch Light on Thursday. Josh Kendall on Wednesday.
Let's
Friday.
Talk, David, one more thing before we go, because
please
I've just received an email.
Okay,
Vanderbilt parts ways with Derek Mason.
Okay.
Not the thing I thought we'd be talking about today.
No, not indeed. Odd timing, but okay.
Well, and Candace Story Lee, you know, new athletic director, coming in hot. I mean, that's you kind of wondered, because that's not a Vandy thing. You know, you thought Derek Mason might get more time just because Vandy doesn't strike you as the kind of school that would do that in the pandemic. But
yes,
for the same reasons that we were talking about Sarah Fuller not getting much work on Saturday, that team was awful. That's one of the worst SEC teams I've seen in a long,
really
long time. And Vanderbilt expects to be more competitive than that. I know they don't. They should not realistically expect to compete for the East title, and I don't think they ever have expected.
If Georgia does that to you, that's one thing. If Mizzou's doing that to you,
right?
Not great.
Right. That is, and so it's interesting. Sort of like I feel like they spent all their ammo against Florida because they actually put up a fight against Florida early on. But you have what appears to be a pretty good freshman quarterback in Seals, and maybe some foundation to work with. The question is, you know, who do you go get? Clark Lee will be the name that pops up like crazy for this job. He's the Notre Dame defensive coordinator. He's a Vandy guy. Dave Clawson will get asked. The Wake Forest coach has been working miracles there. There's a bunch of kind of obvious names. I'm really kind of surprised they did this now, though.
Yeah. James Franklin, run it back.
I don't think they can afford James Franklin's. But you know, if this were last year, James Franklin could have bounced out of Penn State without any buyout whatsoever, and that's why Penn State locked him up. And you know, he'd have to pay a bunch to leave. They'd have to pay a bunch to fire him. So it's out on that one. But yeah, Clark Lee's one. I think that's a name I would expect to hear a lot. Clawson, obviously. Will Healy at Charlotte, who worked a miracle at Austin Peay, you know, just up the road in Clarksville, Tennessee. I don't know that if I'm an upward trajectory kind of coach, if I'm going to take this job, though, because the only person who's ever been able to turn it into something more was James Franklin.
Yep. And I think, you know, if you're Clark Lee, you're sitting – and that's the thing, too. People forget a lot of these coordinator jobs, especially if you get head coaching jobs and want to stay – a lot of these guys are making 1.5, 1.6. Yeah. What's the point? What's the point of leaving? You
know, well, exactly.
Those are better jobs. A coordinator at a perennial playoff contender is better than a low-level Power 5 head coaching job.
Well, I think that's why
Tony Elliott turned down so many opportunities. Tony Elliott has
had chances to be head coach, but if you are the offensive coordinator, play caller at Clemson, being paid very well, and you may be the successor to Dabo Swinney ultimately – It would take a lot to dynamite you out of there, I would think.
Well, a breaking news episode.
How about that?
Football and
who knew?
Look at Andy checking his email before we get off. Well, thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for tuning in. It's going to be an interesting week across the SEC. And as we start at the top of the show, don't be a jerk.
No.
It's not that hard.
No, just be – look, be excited when things go well for other people. Or just be indifferent. There's no need to hate.
Don't hate. Appreciate, in short. Thank you guys for listening. We'll see you later this week.